morning, family. Welcome, newcomers. My name is Kathy, and I am an addict. After watching that video, I'm a little... It always gets to me. It's hard. I stood in my room this morning, and I talked to God, and I said, notes, no notes, notes, no notes. I have my notes. CRS, you know how that goes. You know, I've heard many people say that if it wasn't for Jimmy Kay, they wouldn't be here today. Literally, if it wasn't for Jimmy Kay, I wouldn't be here today. And my beautiful mother, Agnes. Also, if it wasn't for this fellowship, I know I would not be sitting here today. I know it. And this is not about me today, and it's not my story about how I got here. I'll just tell you that I got here through my older daughter and, of course, my higher power, who I pray to every day. And without my higher power, I know I wouldn't be here. There's many members that do not know who Jimmy Kay is, and many people who've never even heard of Jimmy Kay. And I hope I can shed a little light on who he is or who he was. I'm going to start back when he was born in Scotland. I'm half Scottish, so I guess I can handle this. My father was born on April 5th, 1911, and in Paisley, Scotland. Go again. And he used to tell his stories when he was a child, how his childhood went. He would say, I never cottoned to people my own age. And I'm not talking about he wanted to be with people 17 or 18 when he was 7. He wanted to be with adults. And that's who my father hung around with, was adults. And he met, I'm sure a lot of people have heard this story, but I'm going to tell it because it's so vital to the history of N.A. and to his recovery. He met a man named Mr. Cruikshank, who was the town drunk. And at the same time, he was also sent to the chemist, because they didn't have pharmacies in those days, obviously, to get drugs made for children that had colic or stomach aches. And so the mom would send him to the chemist to have paregoric made up, and paregoric had morphine in it. And also the neighboring families would have my dad pick up the medicine for their children. Now, mind you, he's 7 years, 7.5 years old, but he had to taste it because he was a curious little lad and he was ornery. And he liked the way it tasted and he liked the way it made him feel. He said it made him feel at ease. So his first bout with drugs, with paregoric, was at the age of about 7.5. Then he would always seek out his friend, Mr. Cruikshank, and Mr. Cruikshank would tell him to do something with his life and not to become the failure that he had come with his life. My father would find this man bleeding, dirty, his teeth were rotting out of his head, but he loved this man and he always sought him out to visit with him. And one day he found Mr. Cruikshank at the bottom of a stairwell and he was unconscious and he was bleeding. And he went and he got his mother and he said, my friend needs help. They came and they picked him up and they took him to a sanitarium. And he begged his mother for several weeks, please take me to see my friend. And when he got there, he found his friend out on the grounds in a wheelchair. And Mr. Cruikshank just looked holes through my dad. He didn't recognize him. And so on the way home on the trolley car, his mother said to him, Jimmy, why are you so quiet? This is not like you. And anybody that knows my dad personally, if you knew him and you talked to him, he was never quiet. He could talk forever. Anyway, he told his mother, he said, someday I'm going to help people like Mr. Cruikshank. And I think at the same time, I don't know if he knew it, but he was going to help himself recover too. Well, he sure saved a lot of lives, I'll tell you. As children, we all grow up with dreams and visions of the wondrous things we're going to do with our lives. And I had a lot of good dreams and a lot of visions. I certainly never envisioned to grow up and become an addict. And I don't think anybody in this room ever did. But it's what we did, and it's who we are. But we're all here today, and we're clean, and that's what's important. That's what matters. We are all equal. We are we. We are one. I think because of the journey that my father and the three early members that Jean talked about last night, the journey that they took, it saved so many lives. My father always used to tell us we all have choices. It's what we do with our lives. It's what choices we make. He chose to get clean. He chose to help the addict. It was his choice. And that was the way he could fulfill, I think, his dream of helping people like Mr. Cruikshank. I'm thirsty. Hold on. You know, when his life became a total shambles, I was about 4 years old, almost five, and his family was falling apart. I think my mother was at the end of her ropes, didn't know where to go and what to do, because there was nowhere to go back then when you had, well, there were four children then. And they were in California then. And he went to the only place he thought that he knew that he could get help, and that was Alcoholics Anonymous, because we weren't here yet. And I went to my very first AA meeting at the age of about 4 years old. I remember my father detoxing at home, and it was very painful. I thought he was going to die. My father, when I was little, he was my life. I adored him. And, you know, he went to a lot of meetings. He spent a lot of time in his bedroom. And he did spend a lot of time with his family. So going to meetings with my dad was time where I could be with my dad. And maybe we didn't say much on the way to a meeting or the way home at a meeting, but at least I had him. I had him next to me. At AA meetings, I can see the clubhouse perfectly. I know it like the back of my hand. I could describe it to you, but there were three places I could find my dad. Either to the left of the building speaking, back in the kitchen washing cups, and they were the milk glass, the white and the green milk glass, or those were the heavy, thick glasses with the thick, what do you call them? You sit them on? I can't think. Yeah. Or on the back patio. And I was very shy. I'm still kind of quiet and shy. You may not know it. I try to hide it. Whew, I try to be more outgoing. But I would always stand out there beside him. And I didn't know until years later that the people that he was talking to on that back patio, they were addicts as well as alcoholics, but they knew that they needed more than they were getting from AA. And they kept telling my dad, why don't you start something? He kept telling them, why don't you start something? Yeah, back and forth. And this went on for 3 years. Well, my father wrote an article, and he read it at AA, and it was called Problems Other Than Alcohol, and he pissed off a lot of the old-timers. And they told him, why don't you go start your own meeting? And you know, my father was a very stubborn Scotchman, and he said, I think I will. And I think that's what brought them to start to meet together at the house. I know that growing up in the same house with my dad, he was non-stoppable when it came to NA. He still always went to his AA meetings because that's where he got clean. And he called that the Other Beautiful Fellowship. And I today also have a great respect for AA, because without AA picking us up every time we fell apart, where would we be today? They were always there for us. You know, I realize at times there's problems between AA and NA, but why does it matter? As long as we have a fellowship that keeps us clean and we're productive citizens today, it doesn't matter. It's a choice. I choose NA. I love NA. But I wasn't an alcoholic either, so I guess that's why I really love NA. You know, but, you know, when around the house with my dad, he was either on the phone, he was constantly writing. In the later years, when I was a teenager, he would be recording on how to get meetings started in other countries. He would run the mimeograph machine and I would help him. I loved it because there again I was spending time with my father. You know, he did a lot of 12-step calls, and I don't think there's a lot of those done today like there were back in the early days. And invariably, as soon as we would sit down to dinner, the phone would ring, and my sister and my brother and I would look at each other, and we knew he'd be gone because he was 12-stepping. My mother would say, there he goes, another 12-step call. And I don't know, it was hard at times. I felt really bad for my mother because my father wasn't there very much, and it was very hard on her. Yeah, I've met so many beautiful people in this fellowship that have such a passion for the steps, the traditions, the newcomer, service work. And my father had that passion, and I think it's wonderful to have that passion. People have come up to me with tears in their eyes of gratitude. And I am so grateful today that my father and those early members did what they did, because I might not be here either. I was really heading down a bad road. And you know, I tell people I'm old, but I'm not an old timer. I only have 3 years clean. But that doesn't matter. I'm clean. And I'm clean because of this fellowship. And nobody can tell me this doesn't work. To the newcomer that's sitting out there, the people in this room right now, we are just a little grain of salt compared, or piece of dirt in the ocean compared to how large this fellowship is. We are worldwide. We're everywhere. It's amazing. We're in more states and more countries today than ever. And I can tell you that my father, if he could see how large this is today, he would be elated. But you know what he would say? He'd say, we need more meetings. We need to get into more countries. And we need to keep recognizing the newcomer, because you are the most important person in any meeting. And we love you. And if you go out and you come back, we'll still welcome you back. It doesn't matter. There's so much love in this fellowship. The World Service Office came into our house after my mother passed away. And the office became a new vision for my father. And after my mother passed away in 1971, I was already out of the house. In fact, I was divorced from my first husband, who was an addict. He was very abusive. And then our mother died. Boy. And my sister was kind of left there, and I moved her out with me. But you know, the volunteers that came forward were amazing. There was no money back then. Not for printing literature. My dad had that little mimeograph machine, and they had typewriters, and they would all work together, and people would stick things in envelopes and put stamps on and mail them out, and it was all volunteer. It was service work. And you didn't walk into my dad's house without doing service work. He always put you to work. But another thing about my father that I can tell you, it didn't matter what he was doing, who he was talking to. If a newcomer walked into the room, everything stopped. And the coffee went on, and that's a little Turkish pot. Tony D didn't know what to call it. It was a little Turkish pot with a long handle. And it's broken today. I talked to Tony, and it's another story, but Tony broke my dad's coffee pot. But anyway, he would sit down, and he'd always put cookies out, and he would talk to the newcomer. And it didn't matter, like I said, what he was doing. They were the most important person in the room at any time. I'm thirsty again. I believe the future that my dad took with his life and the journey that he took himself, I believe his higher power put him here to do that. His saying that he would help Mr. Cruikshank did become a reality in his life. And what a hard way to go. You know, use drugs, drink, become an addict so that you can help an addict. It's just amazing. It amazes me that all that went on in his life. And I want to be real honest with all you here right now, because that's what you've taught me when I came into this program, to be honest. Those are the tools you gave me. When I was little, I told you he was my whole life. As I started getting into my teenage years, I started pulling away from my father, and I got closer to my mother. And I realized what a hard life that woman lived with that man. They never dated. I think I have a couple pictures where they actually went to Descanso Gardens and they took my little sister. I don't ever remember a babysitter. She was always home. There was very little money. There was very little food. There were a lot of years he didn't work because he couldn't work mentally or because his back bothered him. He was a roofer and a painter. And she held the family together. And so I started forming these resentments towards him. I always loved him, but I resented what he did to my mother. She was such a wonderful woman. And I realized when I came into this fellowship a little over 3 years ago and I started working my steps, I realized that I'm an addict too, and I so understand now where he was coming from, because we were so much alike. I would watch my father when I was a child sit for days and not even talk to anybody. He would get into these real quiet moods, and they were eerie. And that I was always so in tune to what was going on with my mother and with my father around the house. And I could tell the other kids, Mom's not in a good mood, or Dad's in a quiet mood, stay away. And I'm very intuitive into people. I can do the same thing. My husband, I know what kind of moods he's in, generally very good. We have a 35-year great marriage. But I used to be like that. I would get into these quiet moods, and my husband would say, did I do something wrong? Am I in trouble? Do you need something done? What can I do? And I'm like, no, just leave me alone. And I so get that today. And now I know why he did that. It's depression. You get depressed and you don't know what you're depressed about. You don't know why you're depressed. And I know that for me, the steps of my sponsor and being of service and being a sponsor to the girls that I have, that's what keeps me sane today. That's what keeps me going. Without that, I have nothing. But I will always put my recovery first, then my family, and then functions with NA. I will not ever have my family play second fiddle to NA like my father did, because I firmly believe, as much as I love that man, but with the bottom of my heart, NA came first to him. I will always believe that. I know from growing up with him that. That video we just watched, I have another video at home that somebody sent me. And I was told, this is before I got clean, your dad had a message for you guys. He had a message for the family. So every time I got a video, I'd put it on and there'd be nothing. I never got that message. I never got it. But I want to play a little bit of a message from my father about his vision. I'm ready if you wanted to turn it on. It's only 3 minutes.
Is it a video?
No, it's a CD. My husband put this together for me. Thank you. He talked about the children that aren't here yet. Now, when my father passed away, my daughter, my youngest daughter, it's hard. She was 8. She has 72 days clean today. I'm very proud of my Tiffany, my baby. We go to meetings together and it's fun. I'm just so proud of her. And you know, there's drugs run pretty rampant through my family, and I'm sure a lot of your families, and I'm still praying that a few of the children, my grandchildren, make it into the rooms, because they're still out there using. And it breaks my heart, and there's not a damn thing I can do about it. All I can do is love them. I can't do anything until they're ready to get clean. One of them comes over a lot, but he doesn't steal or anything, he promised. But, oh, you know, you just want to grab him and you want to love him and you want to take him to a meeting and you want them to get this thing. But you have to get here the hard way. And if he has to reach the bottom road, then he's going to have to do it. And, you know, rock bottom is sometimes what it takes. You know, when my dad was in the hospital at the end of his life, my sister and I got a phone call. We were about 3 hours away. We made arrangements for our children, for babysitters. Our husbands were at work. My sister was 7 months pregnant. God, I'm sorry. I'm just such a baby. We drove down to Tarzana, and my father was already in a coma. And I can't speak for my sister, but I know that when I went into his room and I saw the hundreds and hundreds of cards, and they weren't get well because we knew he wasn't going to get well. We knew he was dying. They were thank you cards from people in NA from all over the world. It was just so awesome. And I pulled up a chair and I sat down next to his bed. And he was swollen. He was so swollen because he was in a coma. And I put my hand in his hand. And his hands were short and wide. And my hand would get lost in his hand, and it got lost again. And I thought about all the times he held my hand and the meetings we went to together. And then I had a few questions for him, mostly why. Why was NA? You got to remember, I wasn't clean then. Even if I was, why was NA so important? Did your family got put on the back burner? Why? And I'm not up here to push my book, but that's why I wrote that book. I wanted to humanize him. I was having people come up to me saying, your father's like a god to me. He was a human being. He was a man. He was an addict like me and like you. And he had his demons. We all do, you know? I am so proud to be his daughter, and I'm so proud of him, and I'm proud of what he did. But I still wanted people to know that he was a human being. I miss him terribly. I miss my mother. You know, as children, we grew up hearing about the American dream. And his father left Scotland in 1920 to follow that American dream. He took a boat to Ellis Island, and then he went on to Philadelphia, where he worked for 2 years to bring his family over here. My father was 12 and a half when he came to this country at Ellis Island, and he loved the Statue of Liberty. He loved it, and he talks about it. You can hear it in several of his speeches. I always am so grateful that I was born in this country. I was born in America, so I had freedom. And they struggled and they had hard lives in Scotland. And Scotland is still rough today. I know it is. The streets are rough. It's a rough town. It's a rough place to grow up in. But there's a church over there in Scotland, and I can't remember the name of it right now. And it's a church that my grandparents, my dad's parents, were married in. And there's an NA meeting in the basement of that church today. I think that is awesome. Today I live the NA dream. This is how I live. My mother raised us Catholic, very staunch Catholic woman. My father had nothing to do with church. He He had his ashrama and he had his Buddhism, and that was okay. I didn't understand that when I was a child. I thought it was wrong because of the way my mother was so staunch about us children going to Catholic school and being raised Catholic. So much so that when I went to AA meetings with my father, back in the day, they always closed with the Our Father. And at the end, they would say, the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever and ever, amen. Well, we didn't say that in the church, and I would stand there like, and I wouldn't say it. I was this little girl, but my mother was raising me to be this good Catholic girl, and they're adding something that I'm not supposed to do, so I wouldn't add it. And you know, I wanted to let you know that when they first started with NA and meeting, sometimes they would come to our house, and we had this little tiny kitchen table, and under it was a chalkboard under the window. And when my mother wouldn't catch me, I'd crawl into that table, and I'd hear there were only maybe four people there, four or five. Of course, my dad did most of the talking. And I used to draw their feet on my chalkboard, like, you know, his shoes and her shoes. Oh, she has high heels on. But what I came to realize, when I started coming to speak at conventions, at history workshops, not even knowing I was an addict. Now, you may wonder why, how do you not know you're an addict? Because I did prescription drugs and I saw nothing wrong with it. But I know now. I know now. Dr. Shopping was wrong. way wrong. But I was confused because the readings that I was hearing that you read before every speaker meeting or at our meeting, they were so familiar to me. And I hadn't been to a meeting since I was like 17. So what I did, I was in Bandon at the time visiting my daughter before we moved there. And I went to an AA meeting because I had to find out the distinction between their readings and the readings that I recognized. You might think this sounds a little crazy, but I had to know. They still only do two readings at AA. And they were very open. They really welcomed me. I introduced myself as an addict. They invited me back. They were wonderful people. But the readings, I know a lot of the readings that my father wrote, I read when he was writing and laying around the house because I read everything. I'm an avid reader and I love to read. And my sister read everything. As far as the archive room goes that you were talking about, the memorabilia last night, Danny took me in there this morning, and God love him, he's going to make copies and give me a lot of things. But that's not so, I know, isn't he wonderful? But I realized something a couple years ago, that's really not that important. I'm so happy that it's on display. I really am. I was online and somebody texted me and they said, go to eBay, they're selling one of your dad's books with his signature in it. So right away I go to eBay and I put in a bid and I knew who was selling the book. We had had words before. Yeah, I am my father's daughter. I have a temper. It's calmed down a lot though the last few years. So I put in a bid, he turned me down. I put it in bid again and he turned me down. And I sat there looking at it and I thought, you know what? I don't need this book. I don't need any of this stuff. Because I have something that nobody has. And so does my sister. I have my memory of my dad. That's right. So real quickly I typed, never mind. I have something more valuable than you'll ever have in your collection. And right away it comes back, what is it? I want to buy it. I turned my laptop off, shut it, and let it go. You know, that's the way I have to live my life today. And I am very happy that you have what you have, the memorabilia that you do have, and that you are displaying it. I did take a picture of the AA big book, because my sister and I did a lot of reading out of that book. And I called her this morning and I told her that I took pictures. And we both remembered some of the signatures that are on that front page, Penny Kennedy. So she was really excited that she's going to get a picture of that too. But I just want to say that it has been an honor to be here, and I thank the committee for having me. This has been a beautiful weekend, and you know what? NA is so powerful here in Connecticut. You could feel the love. It's spiritual, and I had an awesome weekend, and I so thank all of you. Thank you.